Well, if you'll open up your Bibles again to the book of Mark's Gospel. Mark's Gospel and chapter 5. Now, in front of us we've got two stories. I say stories, that makes them sound like they're made up. These are true stories, these are true accounts of an event that took place in Jesus' life. And they involve two people. A man with a dying daughter and a woman with an incurable disease. Now, before we get into the passage tonight, we've got to ask ourselves a question. And it's a question that we should always ask ourselves whenever we turn to any part of the Bible. And it's this. What does the writer of this book want us to understand? What does he want us to know as he writes the book that he's written? And in Mark's Gospel, thankfully, we're told very early on. We don't have to search very far. Mark's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 1, Mark writes this: the beginning of the gospel, or the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. So the first thing, the most important thing, that Mark wants us to know through his gospel is that Jesus is the Christ. Christ wasn't a surname, it was a title. The other word we might use is the Messiah. The Messiah was the man that all of the Jewish people had been waiting for. The man who had been promised throughout the Old Testament scriptures, who would come and who would finally deal with the problem of sin that began in the Garden of Eden. So the most important thing that Mark wants us to know from his gospel is that Jesus is the Christ. But in his gospel, Mark also wants us to know something else. He wants us to know who the Christ, the Messiah, really is. And that's why at the end of that first verse of his book, we read the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Throughout Mark's gospel, he will be leading us down a path. And in that path, he'll be leading us to a point where we can make no other conclusion but that Jesus really is the Son of God. And that's something we're going to see in our passage tonight. We're not going to discuss that just yet. First things first in our passage tonight, we're going to work our way through the story, or the stories. So, let's begin. Verse 21. We join Jesus as he steps off a boat. And waiting to meet him at the shore is a large crowd. And in that crowd, there stand two people who are especially anxious to meet him. There's a man called Jairus, who has a dying daughter. And there's an unnamed woman who's suffering from an incurable disease. And verses 22 to 23 tell us that it's Jairus who approaches Jesus first. Now, there were many people in the town of Capernaum, which is where Jesus was. But there weren't many people who were more important than Jairus. He was one of the rulers or the leaders of the synagogue. Now, in that society, that was a very privileged position. So how would Jairus usually act in public? Well, he would act properly and formally. And people would show him respect. But here, what do we find? We find that Jairus comes to Jesus and he does something unthinkable for a man in his position. He falls to his knees and begins to beg. But what's he begging for? Well, verse 23. He begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her and she may be healed and she will live." So Jairus is desperate. His little girl is terribly sick. She's at the point of death. and he believes Jesus can heal her. And so he falls at Jesus' feet and he begs Jesus to come and to lay his hands on her so that she can be made well. Jairus, at this point, he doesn't care about what other people think, does he? He's desperate. Time's of the essence. He's got one concern and one concern only, and that's to get Jesus to his door. And so verse 24, Jesus starts walking with him to his house. But now, verse 25, Mark introduces our second character. There's an unnamed woman in the crowd, and she's got a major problem. She's been suffering with what's described as a flow of blood for the past 12 years. And verse 26 tells us she's been treated by lots and lots of different doctors for this illness. But the treatments haven't helped. In fact, Mark tells us that her illness has only got worse. And what's more, now she's bankrupt. There was no NHS in ancient Israel. If you wanted to see a doctor, you had to pay for the privilege. And here's this poor woman who's been so desperate for some kind of cure that she's spent all of her money. But it hasn't helped. She's only got worse. So this woman's sick, and this woman's poor. But what might not be immediately obvious from the passage is that this woman is a social and religious outcast. According to the law of Moses, if a woman suffered from this continual bleeding, she was deemed unclean. What did it mean to be unclean? Well, it meant that a person couldn't attend public worship, because before God they were considered unclean. In the Old Testament, there are many places where, in the law of Moses at least, where the various sicknesses, various illnesses that affected both men and women were deemed as unclean. And that's because they were symbolic of sin. They were a picture of sin. And therefore, when a person had this particular sickness, this particular illness, when a person was deemed unclean, they couldn't come into the presence of God. They couldn't attend public worship. But also, anything or anyone they touched would become unclean. I don't know if you ever remember that Food Standards Agency advert. It was all about washing your hands when handling raw meat. So they had a screen, and the screen was all bathed in blue. And the scene was of a woman, and she was handling some raw meat. And they wanted to show that bacteria was all over the raw meat. And so this woman's handling the raw meat, and her hands are covered in what looks like fluorescent pink paint. And it was representative of the bacteria. And of course, if she had washed her hands, it would have been fine. All the bacteria would have been washed away, but she didn't. And so she goes to the cupboard, and she touches the cupboard, and she opens it. And then she closes it, and there's a pink cupboard. And then she goes to the side, and she touches the side, and there's pink left on the side. And of course, the point is, if you don't wash your hands when handling raw meat, you'll spread bacteria everywhere. She used her unclean hands all over the place, and everything then became unclean. Well, that was the situation for this woman who was deemed unclean. Anything she touched, anyone she touched, became unclean as well. So for 12 years, this woman hasn't been able to attend public worship. And this woman has been shunned by the community. She's seen as polluted. And anyone and anything she touches is polluted as well. She's unclean. So now maybe we can understand why she wants to reach Jesus so much. We can understand why she so desperately wants to be healed. But we can also understand why she wants to do it secretly. She doesn't want anyone in the crowd to know she's there. And she certainly doesn't want Jesus to know that he's been touched by an unclean woman. And so stooping down in the middle of this heaving crowd, she reaches out and just touches the bottom of Jesus' cloak. She thinks to herself, verse 28, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. And as soon as she touches the fabric, immediately, Mark says in verse 29, she knows that she's been healed. Now, she's done this in secret. And she hopes now that she can just fade into the crowd and no one would know. But Jesus scuppers that plan. Because in the middle of this heaving mass of people, Jesus stops. Verse 30. And Jesus, immediately knowing that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? Now let's just picture the scene. If you've watched the news this week, you will have seen that Oscar Pistorius was back in a court this week for a bail hearing. And I suppose the South African court isn't quite as tidy and well maintained as a British court. And in that court, he was surrounded by people. Sorry if there are any South Africans in the congregation. Surrounded by people. As he came in, you could see him. There were photographers with cameras in his face. There were journalists asking him questions. There were security guards. And everyone was pressing up against him. Well, that's the situation for Jesus, isn't it? There's a huge mass of people around him. And he's walking through this huge crowd. And he stops and he says, who touched my clothes? We can understand why the disciples say in verse 31, how can you possibly ask who's touched you? But Jesus won't let it drop. Someone has touched him with a special touch. The touch of faith. And they've been healed. And Jesus wants that person to reveal themselves. And so although she's terribly afraid of what Jesus might say, although she's terribly afraid of what Jesus might do, having been touched by an unclean woman, she comes forward and tells him the whole truth. Verse 33. What's Jesus' response? Well, Jesus' response is exactly the opposite to what this woman would have expected. She probably expected to be told off. She probably expected harsh words. But Jesus says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. She hadn't only believed that Jesus had the power to heal her, but she had acted on that belief. She had reached out to touch him. She had shown faith. And that's what Jesus says has healed her. But actually, Jesus' words make it clear that this woman hasn't just been healed on the outside. She hasn't just been healed physically. Something deeper has happened. When Jesus tells her to go in peace, the term that he uses is essentially saying that she goes being at peace with God. Her faith hasn't just healed her physically. Her faith has healed her spiritually. She's now got a relationship with God. She leaves at peace with God. And so this woman leaves the scene. Now, of course, this incident, we don't know how long it took. It may have taken 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. But can you imagine how Jairus must be feeling at this point? For him, this 5 minutes must have felt like forever. And therefore, we can only imagine, can't we, that he's anxious. And he wants Jesus to get moving. He doesn't want Jesus to be dealing with this woman. His little daughter is dying at home, and all he wants to do is to get Jesus to his daughter. Well, Jesus knows this. Jesus can see this. And so Jesus' words to this woman aren't just for her benefit. Jesus' words to this woman are actually for Jairus' benefit as well. Did you notice it? What does Jesus say? He says, daughter. Now, why does he say that? He could have said, madam. He often said, madam, to women. But here he speaks to this woman and he says, daughter. Because there's a message in there for Jairus. Jairus, who's going out of his mind with worry. Jairus, who is so afraid for the life of his daughter. And Jesus is making the point to Jairus. If I can deliver this daughter, who's been suffering for 12 years, then Jairus, I'm able to deliver your 12-year-old daughter as well. But of course, any comfort that those words may have brought are quickly lost. Verse 35. While he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house and said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? At this point, the bottom of Jairus' world has just fallen out. Everything he was afraid of has happened. His little girl, his beautiful little girl, who he used to hold in his arms, who he used to play with and read bedtime stories to at night. His beautiful little girl, she's dead. Any hope of her being healed has now been dashed. How must Jairus be feeling at this point? And yet into the darkness and into the hopelessness, Jesus speaks. Verse 36. As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid, only believe. This man whose world has just fallen apart, this man who feels there is no hope, to this man, Jesus says, don't be afraid. Have faith. Believe. And so they carry on their journey to Jairus' house. And when they arrive, they're met by the commotion of the professional mourners. And we read verse 38 that they're weeping and wailing loudly. So what's Jesus' reaction? What does he say? Well, verse 39, he says, well, why are you crying? She's not dead. She's asleep. Now, what are we to make of Jesus' words here? Has there been some kind of big mistake? Has this girl kind of just fell into a coma? And everyone thinks she's dead, but Jesus knows better. Well, no. In Luke's account of this same event, Luke tells us that her spirit had left her body. This little girl is dead. So what's Jesus saying? Well, what's about to happen? Jesus is about to wake this little girl up out of death. With Jesus in the house, she might as well be asleep. With Jesus in the house, death has no more power over this little girl than sleep does. Because with a word, Jesus can wake her up. So what's the reaction of the professional mourners? Well, they laugh at him. They ridicule him. These people, what they show is that they've got no faith. They don't believe that Jesus' presence makes any difference. And so, verse 40, Jesus dismisses them. If they've got no faith, they'll have no part in this miracle. And so now everyone's gone. All that are left are Jesus, Jairus and his wife, and three of Jesus' disciples. And now Jesus walks to the bed. And verse 41, then he took the child by the hand and said to her, Talitha kumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. Now think about that for a moment. Jesus could have simply said, little girl, arise. But he doesn't. He says, little girl, I say to you, arise. Why? Well, as many of you know, I've got a 4-year-old son called Oliver. Sometimes, often in fact, Ollie's naughty. And when he's naughty, he obviously gets told off. Because my wife is the one who's usually with him, it's usually her that tells him off. Now, it's fair to say, when he's done saying naughty, Ollie is afraid of his mother. I'm afraid of his mother sometimes, but I go there. But sometimes that telling off doesn't work. And therefore I have to step into the situation. Because if Ollie's afraid of his mum when he's done something naughty, well, he's much more afraid of me when he's done something naughty. And therefore there'll be times when I take Ollie to one side and I say, Oliver, I'm telling you now, behave yourself. My voice and my position as his father carries an authority that no one else has. And the same is true of Jesus. His voice, his position, it carries an authority that no one else has. Jesus here speaks with an authority that even death itself must submit to. And so he says, little girl, I say to you, arise. And with that, Jairus' 12-year-old daughter is woken up from death. And everyone is amazed. But look how the passage ends. The passage ends in a strange way, doesn't it? If it ended there, we would understand. But it doesn't. Verse 43. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. So Jesus tells them, don't tell anyone what's happened here. And give this little girl some food. What does Mark want us to see? Mark wants us to see that Jesus isn't simply a miracle worker who healed people and didn't really care about them. He does care. He's thoughtful. He's kind. He can see that this little girl, who's been ill for a long time probably, hasn't eaten for a while. So she must be hungry. And so he says, give her some food. Can you see what Mark is doing in this passage? He's painting a picture of who Jesus is. Not just his power, but also his character. By the way Jesus deals with the unclean woman, in the way that he offers Jairus hope in a hopeless situation, and even now as he's raised this girl from the dead, and he says, look, let's make sure she has something to eat. We're seeing that Jesus isn't just powerful, but that he's kind as well. Okay, we've run through the passage. So what's it saying to us? Let's see three things. Firstly, we need to remember why Mark is writing this gospel. What does he want us to understand? As we said at the beginning of this message, he wants us to see that Jesus is the long-awaited Messiah, the Christ. But he wants to do more than that. He wants to leave us in no doubt as to the true identity of the Messiah. Now, this year at Holiday Bible Club, the kids sang a song. It was called, Who is This Man? And in each verse, it ran through different miracles that Jesus did. And at the end of each verse, the kids, they had to shout as loudly as they could, Only God can do that. And then they'd sing again, Who is this man? Mark wants us to come away from this passage and this gospel with no doubt in our minds as to the answer to that question. Mark wants us to see that Jesus is the man who is God. And we can see that in this passage, can't we? Firstly, we meet this woman, and she's suffering with an incurable disease. Mark emphasizes that for us, doesn't he? In fact, he tells us she's been seen by doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor, and it hasn't helped. The point is being made loud and clear again and again. This illness, it can't be cured by human skill or knowledge. And then we find Jairus' daughter, and she's dead. Well, death, it's the ultimate full stop, isn't it? When a person's diagnosed with a serious illness, like cancer or something, the doctors, they can offer lots of different treatments. But there's no treatment for death. There's no cure for death. Death is the end of the road for us helping anyone. There's nothing that anyone can do in death. We're powerless to help or to change anything. So here we've got two situations which are totally beyond the ability of man to solve. A woman that no doctor can cure and a dead girl. So who can fix these problems? Well, the kids at Holiday Bible Club, they shouted, didn't they? Only God can do that. And that's what we see in this passage. We see the man who is God fixing the problems that only God can fix. So have you seen it? Have you understood who Jesus really is? He's the man who is God. He's the Messiah. Secondly, Mark wants us to see faith in the man who is God. Yes, this passage shows us who Jesus is, but actually, this passage is showing us more than that, isn't it? Because ultimately, this passage is about faith. We see that most clearly where these two stories, they rub up together. Verses 34 to 36. In verse 34, Jesus says to the woman, Daughter, your faith has made you well. And then only moments later, he says to Jairus, Do not be afraid, only believe. So at the heart of this passage, where these two stories rub together, is faith or belief in Jesus. But what is faith? Well, faith here, it seems, is to reach out to Jesus and to trust in him. So a man is about to leap out of an aeroplane, but he's got no intention of dying today. So what stands between him and death? Well, there's only one thing. It's his parachute. He trusts that his parachute will open when he pulls the cord, and he believes it will stop him plummeting to his death. Now this man, he's believed that when he got on the plane, and during the flight as it's gone up and up and up, he's believed that. But it's not until he jumps out of that plane that he puts his faith in the parachute. Because as he jumps out of that plane, he's putting his trust in that parachute. He's putting his belief into action. In fact, he's staking his life on that parachute. He's putting his faith in it. So to have faith in Jesus is to put belief into action. It's to trust in him. And we see that with this woman, don't we? She believed that touching Jesus would make her well. But it wasn't until she reached out and actually touched him, it wasn't until her belief was put into action that she was made well. And we see with Jairus in verses 35 to 36. His world's just been shattered. His little girl is dead. Everything that Jairus has ever known, everything that life has taught Jairus, is that this now is a hopeless situation. All hope is lost. But it's at this point that Jesus says, don't be afraid. Trust in me. Believe in me. The situation, Jairus, it's not hopeless. Because I am here. So the woman, she reaches out to Jesus. She trusts in him. She puts her belief into action. And Jairus, he's told to believe, to trust in Jesus. So what about you? The question tonight isn't simply, have you seen who Jesus is? Have you realized that Jesus is the man who is God? Believing that isn't enough. There are people across this country who go to church every week who believe that, but they're not saved. The question tonight is, have you personally put your trust, your faith in the man who is God? But trust him for what? What do you need to trust him for? What do you need to put your faith in him for? Well, what do we see in this passage? In this passage, we see the result of sin, don't we? We see the result of a world ruined by sin. This woman, her illness, it's both a result of living in a world ruined by sin, but it's also a picture of sin, isn't it, from the Old Testament. And then we find Jairus and his daughter, and she's dead. What does the Bible say? It says the wages of sin is death. Death, it's sin's trump card. It's the ultimate reality of living in a world ruined by sin. Everyone and everything dies because sin has ruined everything. So here we see the power of sin ruining people's lives. But onto the scene steps the man who is God. And he completely diffuses and disables the power of sin. When I was in year 7 at school, I was playing in the playground one day, me and a few friends, and a big boy from year 10, he came up to us, and he liked the look of my football, and he said, I'm going to have that. And when I was year 7, I was short and ginger and weedy, and I wore glasses. It was a no-brainer. I said, okay. So he walked off with my ball. What he didn't know was that I had a bigger brother. I had a brother in year 11, and my brother was tough. So I went up to my big brother Tom, and I said, Tom, that boy's stolen my ball. So Tom walked over to him. And this big year 10 boy who looked so strong and who I was so afraid of, suddenly he shrunk and he looked so small. But that's what we're seeing here, isn't it? Sin. The rebellion against God that's ruined this world, that's caused death and disease and suffering. And yet when the man who is God steps onto the scene, big old powerful sin shrinks before him. Jesus is showing his power over the power of sin. But of course one day, Jesus would go further. Because one day he'd go to a cross. And one day he'd be nailed to that cross. But he would be nailed to that cross in order to hammer the death nail for the power of sin. He died to take sin's punishment and he rose to conquer death. He died to destroy the power of sin. And we see here the power of Jesus over the power of sin. And so again, we ask ourselves tonight, what about us? What about you? If Jesus is able to deal with sin, if Jesus went to a cross to experience the punishment of sin, and if he rose again to conquer death and sin and hell, then have you come to him with your sin? That sin that makes you unclean. That sin that separates you from God. That sin that will ultimately one day take you to hell. Have you brought that to Jesus? Have you come to the man who is God by faith? That's what this passage is telling us tonight. That you need to come to him in faith. You need to personally reach out to him and put your trust in him. You need to say, Lord, save me. And trust in him. What's the third and the final thing we see tonight? What did we say that Jesus, that Mark was showing us? Mark shows us Jesus' power, but he also shows us Jesus' character, doesn't he? We see in this passage how kind and loving and gentle Jesus is with those people who come to him. Look how kindly he responds to them. So maybe you're here tonight and you're a Christian. Maybe you've got unsaved children or parents, brothers or sisters, relatives, friends. And their lifestyle and the way they feel about God, the way they talk about Jesus, it breaks your heart. Well, learn from Jairus. What does Jairus do with a daughter who's dying, with a daughter who's in a terrible state? He comes and he falls at the feet of Jesus and he begs. Well, tonight, you can come to Jesus. And you can fall at his feet. And what response will you receive? The most kind and the most loving and the most gentle response you could ever imagine. Because he does care. He did care about Jairus' daughter, didn't he? Even though he stopped in the crowd to deal with this woman, that didn't mean he didn't care. And there was Jairus and his world's just fallen apart. And who's there next to him? Who's there to comfort him? Jesus. Who's there to say, Jairus, don't be afraid. Trust me. It's Jesus. So you tonight, as you come to Jesus on behalf of others who can't come to him themselves, who won't come to him themselves, as your heart breaks and as it seems such a hopeless situation, who's standing by your side saying, trust me, it's Jesus. But maybe you're here tonight and you're not a Christian. And we've already spoken about the need to have faith in the man who is God. How will he respond though if you come? Well, look at Jesus' response to the woman. She comes to him, she's unclean, she's rejected by society, she reaches out and she touches him. How would a Pharisee have responded in that situation? Can you imagine it? They would have screamed at her, wouldn't they? How dare you touch me? You're unclean. Get away from me. But what does Jesus say? He says, well done. You were sick. You were unclean. So you didn't stay away. You came to me. Your faith has made you well. He doesn't tell her off. He doesn't tell her to go away. He welcomes her with open arms. And he doesn't just heal her physical sickness. He heals her spiritual sickness as well. He says, go in peace. And she leaves with a right relationship with God, a new and a wonderful relationship with God as her father. So maybe tonight you've come here and you're an unclean sinner. And like the woman, you can barely lift your head for shame. And you feel unclean. And maybe you think if you come to Jesus, he'd never accept a sinner like you. But this passage tells us that tonight, if you come to the man who is God, and if you come to him in faith, and if you reach out to him and say, Lord, save me, forgive me, then this kind, loving, gentle, generous Jesus will welcome you with open arms. And if you came in here tonight as an unsaved, unclean sinner, you can go in peace with God, through the man who is God.